Welcome everyone, and this is the second episode of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio. Today we are talking genius. With me I have my co-host and communication executive here at Lid Publishing, Charlotte. How are you, Charlotte?
I'm really well, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine myself, thank you very much for asking. And our guest today is Miles Downey, the author of Enabling Genius, A Mindset for Success in the 21st Century. Hi, Miles.
Hello, nice to be here.
Thank you very much for joining us today. And just to give our audience a bit of background information, Miles is an expert in human potential and coaches executives and leadership teams. He is also the author of the bestseller, Effective Modern Coaching, and again, the upcoming Enabling Genius this March. So, let's get started.
Miles, how about we start by you telling us a bit more about the Enabling Genius project?
Well, about two and a half years ago, a small group of people noticed that there was a whole raft of information available on performance, potential, all aspects of how human beings can excel. But they all sat in a whole variety of different silos. Mm-hmm. So the psychologists don't speak to the biologists. So what we decided to do was to see if we could bring all that information together and make it, simplify it, make it more concise and communicable. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, then started us thinking about what forms, and of course a book is the obvious form. Yeah. But what's interesting is that group of people come from Russia, Canada, the UK, obviously, Sweden, Spain, so that was a huge, and they have all got very different disciplines, and a number of business coaches, but behind that quite different disciplines. So yeah, we had quite a diversity of opinion and thought as we got going, which of course had its own problems. But and then after a while we began to get clear about what the essence of Enabling Genius was.
Yeah. Okay, so how does this relate to your book, Enabling Genius?
Well, as we got to that essence, we realized that there were a number of central propositions, and we began to develop a model that we call the Pillars of Enabling Genius. And of course, they are the subject of the book. So the central notion, which is that genius is available to all. Mm-hmm. So we've kind of arrived at a situation where, for whatever reason, genius is the preserve of the few. Very, very few people get to be called genius.
Yeah.
And most of them are dead. And actually, if you push even further and talk to people, you'll find out that there were really only two geniuses, Mozart and Einstein. So it's like, why would humanity, society, have set it up that genius is just two people? When we all kind of are pretty much created in the same way, same number of brain cells, same number of connections between them. So there's something else going on there. So if you look back at the history of the word genius, it starts in kind of Roman times. And the idea of a genius was that it was somebody who was external to you, a kind of a guiding spirit who would look after you from your birth and guide you through life. Mm-hmm. And that you can find that in Arabia and in Greece, and actually our Russian friend, Andre on the team, had a similar notion in Russian folklore. So it's like this entity that's outside yourself. So, but everybody had a genius in those days. A little bit later, they kind of mixed up the idea of genius with talent, ingenium. And talents are something that are inside you. And then, so that's a shift. One, it's outside. Yeah. So if it's inside you, you have some control over it. But then you get to people like Galton in the 1850s, who was a cousin of Darwin. And he wrote a book called The Hereditary Nature of Genius. I can't remember the exact title, but the implication was that actually it was only genius was inherited.
Okay.
So what society was trying to do was trying to say that only very few people get to be called genius or to be genius, mm-hmm. because everybody else is needed to clean the factories, man the factories, or be shot in trenches. So it's just not a convenient notion. So education, state, church, all contrive to suppress the natural and the inherent genius in everybody. And we're saying that's simply, one, it's not true, because we acknowledge that everybody has potential, but then we say, but only a few people are actually genius. Mm-hmm. So hold on, everyone's got potential, but it's capped. So that just doesn't add up.
Yeah.
So one, it doesn't add up, it's not true, and two, as we move into the 21st century where work is changing And there are huge problems in the way in which we manage people. Most of the talent management processes and the performance management processes serve to suppress people. Most of them. Mm-hmm. They're about having people comply and conform. That's not how you get genius. That's not how you get creativity.
Yeah.
And it's certainly not how you get people to engage in your organization. So as we move into the 21st century, we've got massive problems to solve at all kinds of levels. Dumbing down the people around us is not the way to solve those problems. The job of each individual and each kind of society or community is to find ways to release that potential. So the book is... It's a big book. Well, it's not a big book physically, but it takes on some big themes and tries to make them, as I said earlier, simplified and communicable.
Okay. So you touched briefly on method there.
Yeah.
How would you normally go about coaching a leader to bring about their full potential?
You know, the truth is that this is something new to me, because what I bumped into as I did the research was... One, I had to find ways of exploring my own genius,
mm-hmm.
And we might come back to that. But two is I had to think differently about how I worked with the people that I was working with, because most of the work that I was doing, coaching very senior people in organizations, was either about having those people survive
mm-hmm.
in their environments, deeply political, deeply conflicted, and environments where it's very, often very difficult to do the right thing, or simply get their next job, which is no fun. So I now only work with people who have a significant challenge ahead of them. So the first thing is identifying that challenge. So I'm working with a person in a bank right at the moment, and his job is to transform the nature of banking, because banking in terms of is essentially an electronic provision, just like Amazon or Google. Banking is about IT. There are no bank managers anymore. But they're years behind. So if you lose your credit card or your debit card, it takes them 2 weeks to get your new one. Why can't you have it by lunchtime? You know, I mean, so he's addressing those kind of problems.
That's my question
every time. Yeah, well, exactly. So this guy I'm working with, who will remain nameless, is trying to crack those kinds of problems. So first of all... he needs to think about how he leads his team, how he manages the relationships with other parts of the bank in a completely different way, because he's no longer just trying to survive. He's trying to do something extraordinary. So once the challenge is clear, it puts a whole number of different strictures and possibilities and requirements into the coaching relationship that are quite different. So it's every aspect of the way he plays his game is pretty much put under the microscope. The way he manages himself. We had a conversation the other day, which I've never done before, simply about his health.
Yeah.
Because if he's not healthy, he can't play that game.
Yeah.
So it starts with setting more extraordinary goals, and it starts with finding ways to help people identify what it is that they uniquely bring. So the guy I'm thinking about, he will be a leader in an absolutely unique way. So the question to him is, what's your unique individual genius as a leader?
Yeah.
And that's not easy to define. It takes a number of conversations and a lot of reflection. But then once you've identified that, the question is, how do you get great at that?
Yeah.
So then we've set in place ways for him to think about how he can be really great as that leader. How can you practice that? So
mm-hmm.
he takes opportunities to go out and to different parts of the business where he normally wouldn't have, in the past, he wouldn't have visited them. But he goes in there with a very specific agenda, which is to practice being that leader that he really is.
Mm-hmm.
And then he takes time to reflect on it so that next time he does it, he's even better. So I think one of the absolute keys to enabling genius is that whole thing of learning.
Yeah.
I think that's absolutely fascinating, Miles. And I think the question for me following on from that conversation would be, is there anyone currently that you consider a genius? I mean, I know that you mentioned that there's only two that were considered overall to be, you know, kind of this sparkling brilliance in history. But surely there is someone at the moment that you consider a genius.
Indeed. So we're first of all faced with a little bit of a problem here, which is that it's not in my gift to confer genius status on anybody. But the point behind that is that it's that genius is available to all, and the path to genius is actually quite clear if you look across what the people who have excelled done in all walks of life. There are huge lessons and similarities that are common to those people. And I think it might be a dangerous and an old paradigm to suggest that there's a bar that you have to jump over to be a genius. So I still haven't reconciled all of that quite yet. What I do know is that there are numerous people who, by the very fact of committing to the extraordinary, of committing to a path of genius, in my view, that's already genius. Because it completely transforms everything you do. I was in my youth a tennis player, and in my 50s have started playing tennis again. But I've done it in the context of Enabling Genius, so it's been my personal laboratory for the book. And it's been harrowing, because I stand on the court, and everybody who might, if I'm lucky, read the book, is kind of watching me. At least in my mind, to see if I'm living up to my principles, but staying within the realm of tennis and knowing that sport isn't the thing that everybody loves, but actually it's a wonderful laboratory, because if something changes, you see the result, unlike in many other activities one can engage in. So if you take Roger Federer, who many people would say was the best tennis player of all time, that's a certain level of achievement. What really gets me about Federer is not that. He very recently said that he was disappointed. That wasn't the very word he used, but that was the sentiment. That he hadn't had enough time to practice. In other words, the demand of the tour and having to play week in, week out in order to maintain one's ranking had taken away from him the opportunity to really develop his game. Mats Wilander, a fantastic tennis player for a number of years back, and a commentator, commented that if Federer had the coach that he's had last year, back on Stefan Edberg, 10 years ago, what would we have seen? So the point there is that what's central to what Federer has done has been about learning and development and not being satisfied with what went before. And how he does that is a lesson to us all. I read an article the other day, and it said, practice makes perfect, but it doesn't make new. And for me, new is the genius. And you know, we see child prodigies who learn to play the violin, and they achieve extraordinary standards of excellence, and sometimes they burn out, and sometimes they make it, and sometimes they don't. Usually the thing is what happens is they've learned a certain model and certain rules about what it takes to play the violin and be a violinist. But very few of them have the courage to break out and do something. Very few of those prodigies become composers. However, you look at Nigel Kennedy, you may not like all his music, but he's been utterly creative once he reached a certain point. I was listening to him the other day on the radio, playing some Jimi Hendrix music on a violin. Extraordinary. That, to me, is genius. Wow. And so let me go back to where I started with, is that not only do I think the path to genius is clear and available to all, but there are also on a far more everyday level, there's such a thing as a moment of genius, when anybody will have had that experience. I remember walking across a road in Hong Kong and suddenly understanding the nature of control and empowerment in organizations, and coming up with a model that embraced leadership, management, and coaching, which was a unique insight. And it happened because I had set an environment for myself in which I wasn't distracted, in which I gave myself this thing to play with. I'd made some notes the night before as I had my meal in my hotel with a glass of wine. I'd slept well, and I'm walking to see the client, and the insight hits. Now, I set up that insight. I set up that moment of genius. But that's available to everybody. And you know, if we went and asked both of you, as the interviewers and the presenters here, we could very quickly find a moment of genius.
Mm-hmm. So you're sort of saying that innovation is a big part of Enabling Genius, and also working hard for it. Is there any like particular brief tips that you could give someone to unearth their genius?
Well, we came upon the notion of the pillars of genius, mm-hmm. and I started professional life as an architect, and pillars are the things that hold the building up, but mm-hmm. they're not the whole building.
Yeah.
So the idea with the pillars is they are the things that enable genius. They're the fundamentals, but there are many, many other things. And there are four of them.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is about identity. So we choose a way of being in the world. And when I say we choose, for most of it happens by accident. I became an architect because I grew up in a certain kind of family with certain kind of social expectations about what one would become. And you know, suddenly you find yourself in third level studying architecture. Now, it wasn't a bad fit, but it wasn't something that I chose, and it wasn't a real expression of what I'm great at. So what we know is that about 50... Well, what we know, that's a very dangerous thing to say because it will change by tomorrow. But there is some evidence that about 50% of what we become, we can influence.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, we've gone well beyond the nature versus nurture argument.
Yeah.
The job is to find out what your gifts are, and then find out ways of accelerating their expression.
Mm-hmm.
So find out what you're great at, and then learn to be fabulous at it. So that's the first thing. So you know, I spent a lot of my life running businesses and starting businesses. And in the last few years, I've realized that's not what I'm great at. I can do it, just about. But actually, what I'm much better at is creating stuff, writing books. I've got an automated e-coaching system called Enable. That's nobody else is doing that in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm good at creating this. And as soon as I realize that, I can learn to get better at it. And I can devote more time to it. So first, there's a thing about identity. And understanding what that is. Then it's the learning piece. So it's about how you learn to get better in whatever that unique individual genius is. Then there's another thing which is, and it's worth actually saying about unique individual genius, is that can change over time. Just because you choose something when you're 20 or 30 doesn't mean that that'll be the right thing for you at 40 or 50.
Yeah.
So you can choose many and work on them. And that's, for me, that's just an exciting notion. That means you don't die when you're 50, which would be a bit late. The other thing then is learning. We've spoken about that. A third thing is desire. And I use the word desire rather than motivation or will, because desire for me can embrace not just the kind of the masculine kind of blinkered, psychotic kind of worst aspect of will that kind of takes no prisoners, very masculine, but also it embraces a more feminine thing that allows for mistakes, allows for doubt, is more purposeful.
Mm-hmm.
So understanding what your desire is so that you get the energy to pursue your goals and whatever else is critical.
Yeah.
And the fourth piece then, is mindset. A big part of the mindset bit is about one's openness to learning at one level, and another part is about something called flow.
Mm-hmm.
So a guy called Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi 20 years ago identified a mental state that he labeled flow. And in the state of flow, one gives one the best performance, which is often way beyond what one expected, and one learns better. And one, not only does one learn better, one learns from oneself.
Mm-hmm.
It's often not stuff that's put in from the outside. It can be stuff that you're taught, but often it's something that comes from within, from awareness. A guy called Timothy Galway, who wrote a book called The Inner Game of Tennis, said, awareness is curative. So the very act of becoming aware of something changes it.
Yeah.
So the last bit, being in a state of flow, is critical. And that's in investigating all of these things, what one realizes is none of these things are set in concrete. That one can change one's identity, one can manage one and grow one's desire, and one can learn to get into a state of flow. So it's not that some people have a natural capacity to be in flow. Not true. You can learn to do that, and you can get
mm-hmm.
better at it. So those four things: identity, desire, mindset, and at the center of all of that is this idea that actually learning is the center of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, that's some good advice. I'm going to go away and study it deeply.
Just read the book.
Yeah. Okay. Finally, last question. What are you currently reading?
Oh, God. I have a very good friend, Richard Merrick, who's been part of the team, and he throws books at me that he thinks I should read, and about 50% of them I do read. But having written the book on genius and spent most of last year doing it, I got back to what I much prefer to read, which is literature. And so I have a number of famous authors, John Irving, the American, being probably at the top of the list, Peter Carey. At the moment, I'm struggling slightly with Orhan Pamuk, I think that's how you change the name, Turkish author, called, his latest book, A Strangeness in Me. Some of his books I love, and some I stop after about 40 pages, and I'm not sure which one this is yet.
Mm-hmm. Would you describe him as a genius?
I think, certainly on the path. If you look at the diversity of things that he's written, I think the early one was the Red book, or a title like that, and that was a historical novel, kind of slightly racy and fast moving, and then he's others which are, you know, paint dries quicker. So he's actually opened in London, just around the corner, an exhibition. Because he had a book called The Museum or something like that.
Yeah.
So he's actually, which is all through his trust. So he's that's the point. It's practice make perfect, it doesn't make new. He's constantly looking for the new. And that, for me, is the essence of genius.
Okay. Thank you, Miles.
And with that, Miles, I would like to thank you very much for coming and taking the time to see us today. And if you would like to find more about Miles and Enabling Genius, you can check www.enabling-genius.com. And as well, please be aware that the book will be out this March on the 16th. And as always, you can find Lid Publishing on Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn at Lid Publishing. And notes about today's show will be in the description below. Thank you very much for listening.